Tea.com Tea Talk Podcast. Stefan Tiedorf here with my co-host, the wonderful, the old, the wise, but still beautiful, Scott McLeod. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Doing good. Getting into the spirit of the season, I think now with the PGA Tour and LPGA Tour wrapping up, it seems almost like there's going to be, you know, nothing to talk about ahead. Wrong.
Yeah, I mean, we usually take a little bit of a break around Christmas, but this is usually when big signings happen, changes True. Happen. We're going to get into one of those that many people would have seen out there today. There was tons of news and noteworthy things that happened this weekend, and we're going to get into all of it. But before we do, what's new? What's going on? How are things? What's going on in the cave these days?
The cave is
busy.
The cave is definitely busy. We've got all the college kids are starting to come back home, so the birds are coming back to the roost. To you know, the flock are all coming back to get some practice in. Yeah, and it's kind of nice, you know, kids that you've worked with virtually over the years. So it's nice to see them back. And, you know, as you're aware, Noah Steele is back home for a little bit here before he heads out to Team Canada camp and PGA Tour Latino America and Argentina and Chile. So he's been at the cave hitting some balls the last few days, getting things kind of dialed in with some new equipment and stuff like that, that he got sorted out at Titleist and their TPI facility there a little while ago. So that's been impressive just to watch. So overall, yeah. And we're getting ready to do our holiday gift guide at Flagstick as well. So that's going to be out in the next week or so. So that's been occupying my time too.
I like it. I actually asked for a indoor putting tool, the one with like a laser up the putter and everything. I'm sure you and I will chat about that. I like this idea. Well, in the next week, let's come with some of our favorite gifts from the gift guide. Is it out this week?
Another week, I think it could be out. Yeah, it could be out at the end of the week, but yeah, whatever it takes. I mean, there's lots of items there. I mean, I think I distilled it down to 40 or so, but I probably looked at 200 before I made some decisions on that. So yeah, it's always fun this time of year. Everybody's always talking about it. You know, I do some polls on Twitter and stuff too, and ask people kind of, you know, what they're hoping for. Or do they expect a golf related gift item? So, you know, it's sort of a loaded question, especially when you have an audience that's primarily golfers. But I think the survey I did last week, I think there was like 75 or 77% of them expected some sort of golf related gift this year. So good for them.
Yeah. Two things next week. I want to go over our favorites, but I want you to throw out a tweet, an Instagram post. What's the worst golf gift that you've gotten? Yeah. I want to break those down. I'm sure we've done it before, but let's do it again. I am curious. You mentioned college kids coming home and a lot of those kids, they have a coach down there that, you know, they're working on their swing and everything. As they're, you know, swing coach prior to going, how do you balance that? Like, do you work directly with that college coach, or are you taking the word of the player when they come here to say, this is what my coach is working on? Is there any interaction between the two, or does it depend on which school?
Yeah, it really depends. In most cases, though, the coaches are there to sort of manage the team and manage the players. They're not there to be swing coaches. So they recognize and understand that, you know, these players all developed with their own personal coaches getting there. And then, you know, if they've worked with that coach for 7 or 8 years, you can't just jump in there as their college coach. And, you know, you've only seen these players for like 2 weeks and all of a sudden make changes. It's no different than a lot of things that would happen with, you know, national teams or provincial teams. It just depends who the coach is. You know, granted, a lot of people will know their college coaches in some cases might have been more, you know, transportation providers. You know, they drove the bus and did that sort of thing. But, you know, there's other ones that are super knowledgeable as well and can be very helpful.
Shout some out. Come on, give me some names of some great coaches.
So if we look at, you know, John Mills, who's the head coach at Kent, his assistant coach, Ryan Yip, who obviously you're familiar with as well, you know, former player, JC Deacon, who's down at the University of Florida, Aaron Thorne, who's a women's coach at Kennesaw, Brennan Webb, who's obviously been on this podcast at University of Tennessee. There's a ton of them that way. But, you know, again, they have a job and a responsibility to sort of manage the team, make sure the players are doing what they're supposed to be doing from an academic standpoint. They're going to look at them every now and then and maybe act as another set of eyeballs. They may record some swings and pass them on, but in most cases, they're not going to be, you know, diving in there and trying to change something that, unless it really needs fixing, or maybe the person doesn't have a coach.
That is fair. Why don't we get into the week that was, because there's somebody in here that I don't think needs a new coach. I think they know exactly their golf swing inside and out. Why don't you start it off with your birdie? Everything we were break down with a birdie, a par, a bogey, and I will mention. Let's hit the birdie for you for this week. Who's your birdie going to, Scott?
Yeah, that was a tough one, because like you said, there was so much going on this week, and all of a sudden a lot of it happened really in the last probably 36 hours or so. But I went for Jin Young Ko just because the fact that, you know, she won five times. She won that CME Group Championship. The coolest part, though, of why she's getting the birdie from me is that she ended that tour championship hitting 63 greens in a row, 63 greens in regulation. Basically, if you look at stats, the longest streak ever recorded is about 50 plus was recorded on the PGA Tour. Even when
like Tiger, 96, I believe it was.
Yeah. And even when Tiger Woods was, you know, doing his or had his streak or as best as he was playing in 2000, it was Mike Hynden in 1995. And then the best streak ever for Tiger during that 2000 season was 29 in a row. So that just puts it in perspective as far as how historical that was and how difficult that task is. Now, that doesn't always guarantee a player is, you know, going to score. They could three putt, they could just two putt all of them, whatever the case may be. But she was just dialed in, finished at 23 under, and just did it in first class fashion in the way that she finished out the year. And the remarkable part is, five wins this year, wins that, does that the way she has, she's still only second in the world rankings. Nelly's still ahead of her. So that just shows you the level that's happening of golf right now in the LPGA Tour.
And that's, I actually gave myself a bogey this week. So I got to start my bogey because of that. I feel like even, you know, you and I keep up on the ladies game and there's other people that cover it very, very well. But even myself, who has a podcast every single week and watches a ton of golf and knows people out there, like, even I've been sleeping on Jin Young Ko. I come on here and talk about Nelly Korda being like, could anybody beat her right now? Yeah. And it's like, yeah, there's somebody on that tour that can beat her. And it's Jin Young Ko. She's missed one cut ever in an LPGA sanctioned event. She's missed two majors outside of that. And that's it in her professional that's career insane. On the LPGA and on the world tour when we include majors. So if you look at it that way, that's a 1-to-1 ratio of missed cuts to player of the years. And I wonder if it's, and it sounds bad, I think it's probably a hard conversation to have, if it's that we don't market, I'm going to put it this way, non-white players well in North America. I feel like the Nelly Korda is the easiest way. The Michelle Wees are the easiest way. But when they're from North America, it's easy. But when they're from South Korea, Japan, all over there, it's almost like, oh, no, we have our people. We almost force them when it's like, we have Jin Young Ko right here. Why aren't we celebrating her, marketing her more? I don't know. Maybe there's an uncomfortable conversation to have there. I don't know if we're the experts on it by any means, but it just made me wonder, is there an unconscious bias behind all of it?
I would say there is, and I would say that's, you know, US based more than anything. I would say the LPGA Tour does a great job promoting all their players, and they obviously, you know, include a lot of their players in their social media and their interviews and everything that they're doing. They're very good about their international players, but I think just that huge bias and the fact that there's such of the population of people that have watched golf are American, that, you know, that's the focus. You know, you slip in Brooke Henderson because, again, she becomes that, you know, that same stereotypical. You look at her, as you said, you know, as far as you look at a race and things like that, they sort of blend her in there. So I would say there's definitely probably a lack of respect for players that are not based in the U.S. and are from different. I mean, look how well Celine Boutier played this weekend. And, you know, if she's from France, and, you know, again, I mentioned her last week as a possible, as far as player coming in here, but you know, all the attention is all of a sudden on Nelly, right? And you do hear that if you look on social media, there's a whole bunch of people that are like, oh, I'm just not going to watch that because it's not an American player or whatever. So I agree. I think people are really sleeping on something if they're not realizing that it's a very international game. I mean, we look at the World Golf Championships for junior girls that's held in Canada, and it wasn't held this past year or the year before just because of COVID, but it's a very international field, and a lot of those players go on to play on the LPGA Tour. And I think, you know, Trista Mullally put it, the national team coach for women, put it to me well a few years back, and we were talking about things at that point. I think it was 150 of the top 500 women's amateur in the world were all from South Korea. And he said, there's more coming and it's going to be half. And I haven't looked at it lately, but I bet you it's close to it at that point. So if people are using that bias based on, you know, race and background and the country they're from, they better wake up because the game is changing a lot, and it's going to change on the men's side of it too. We're going to see more and more international players, and people have to recognize that this is a world game now.
I agree 100%. What's the next topic you want to go down, Scotty? You want to hit your par? You want to hit your bogey?
Why don't we get to your birdie? Because that's obviously a topic that was probably the hottest one on the internet yesterday and blew up things. So why don't you get to that one?
Yeah. So I'm giving a birdie to Tiger Woods, and not because of the swing video, which, I mean, it is a wedge. Let's all settle down. I did tweet. You distracted me in your peanut brittle. Yeah. Knowing that thing.
I got a care package from my mom.
Okay. 51 years old, still getting care packages from mom. I appreciate that. But what I was saying before you interrupted me rudely with your peanut brittle, which is probably why you wanted me to go next so you could chomp on it, is the swing was great. Everyone can relax. It's a wedge in his hand. It's going to look good. Even if that was his first swing, yeah, it's Tiger Woods. It's potential, you know, arguably the best player of all time. I'm giving it a birdie because he took the spotlight off Rory. That was a tough morning for Rory. He goes out and shoots 74 after, you know, everything looking great for Rory last couple of weeks. I even gave him a par the week prior, rips his shirt. They have the Nike One Nipple, new design out there. And then all the memes coming out of like, hey,
did you see the Slacker Tide graphic?
Yeah, it's just
the incredible sulk.
Yeah, it felt like a hero move. Like, who rips their shirt and then comes out? Especially, so he ripped his shirt in the locker room, right?
Yeah,
he has a hot, like, what, 5, 6, 7, maybe a t-shirt in there, right? I would assume he's got it all sitting there. Just felt like a hero move. But Tiger takes it, the spotlight off of Rory, puts it on himself. The world gets really excited. Just a positive thing altogether. Swing looks great. I'm sure everyone, you know, was calm about it, but it was, you know, a tough morning seeing Rory fail to win. Obviously Colin Morikawa wins and another great winner, and we can debate the whole should he actually have been the one leading, you know, the European tour at that point. I don't care, the race to buy, whatever, but yeah, it tough start considering a lot of people were rooting for Rory, but Tiger saves the day once again with a wedge in wherever he was, medalist golf club or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, the, obviously the pace of interest in that was huge. I mean, it was drawing a million views an hour. I mean, it was insane as far as that. The only thing I was concerned about, and again, I don't know how deliberate, how much thought was put into it of putting that out there, whatever the case may be, you know, was there intention one way or the other? But just going back to the topic you just talked about, kind of wish you didn't do it on the Sunday of the Tour Championship for the women. You know, there's a few more eyeballs that are probably in people were talking about, you know, Tiger than we're talking about that. But I don't think it was intentional of, oh, we're going to release it on this date because of this or whatever. Yes, there was intention there. I'm going to put this out today or whatever. But, you know, again, is there a perfect day to do that? Probably not. It was good to see. I mean, really, it's a very functional golf swing. Obviously, the pace that it was going at wasn't really much.
Was the other thing.
I'm not
very gonna, slow
yeah.
edge.
Yeah, like, as I wrote about it today, I called it a dainty swing, is what I put it. But I mean, technically, it was pure. I mean, technically it was very pure, but you know, and we'll get to some questions later because there is at least one question in the mailbag about that.
Good to know.
But yeah, you know, it was a birdie. Good to see. As far as Rory, you know, it wasn't like I didn't watch all of it, but it wasn't like he jumped out on the behind the putting green to do it. He was inside doing on his phone. So did he know he was going to get caught as far as somebody was going to see him with that shirt? Yeah. You know, whatever the case. And here's the thing.
It went Janet Jackson. He just, well, you know, yeah, that was one of the best Super Bowl performances all time. I said, why not? Why not? It worked for Janet.
Yeah, there you go. The other thing was, you know, it wasn't like he ripped someone else's stuff or broke a club or whatever. I mean, it's just for himself. So again, you know, I guess it was just a funny moment more than anything. But on the other side of it, it shows that he cares. And I mean, we know that he cares, and that it was important to him. And, you know, he was obviously upset with it. Different way to show it for sure. That wouldn't be my first go to grab my shirt and rip it. But who knows what you're thinking at that point. But funny enough.
The Hulk,
the Incredible Hulk.
I mean, they gotta call him that going forward. What's your par for the week?
Yeah, my par for me was, you know, in talking about players and underrating players and appreciating, and you know, it's always going to be that way. We're always looking at the superstars of the game. They're going to get the bulk of the attention, and a lot of times we sleep on a lot of players. And I think a lot of people were sleeping on Taylor Gooch. And you know, I heard some people on social media, even though when he had a significant lead yesterday, a lot of people seem to think he was just going to melt, or, you know, maybe he shouldn't be in that position or whatever. But this is a guy who won, you know, over $2 million last year. And then heading into this event, granted, he was T60 in Houston. He struggled a little bit there, even though he was T5 the year before in Houston. This is a guy who has finished T4, T11, T5, T11 for his other starts this year. So I think people need to realize that, you know, he's for real. And, you know, there's no point of, you know, kind of knocking this down and thinking he's not going to be capable of getting this win. This guy's clearly capable of doing it. And so are, you know, a lot of other guys that are on the tour. I mean, they didn't get to there because they're not capable of winning. I mean, a lot of them will have won at least something on some other level. It may not be on the PGA Tour, but they've got skills. So I think people need to realize that now that we're not in the Tiger era, even though, you know, we talked about it, superstars are great. They will dominate to a certain point. But the bulk of events are going to be won by other players. And you know what? The game is healthier when there are more players involved and more players, you know, making things happen.
Yeah. I assume, you know, now, because you were doing a little bit of your research, but Taylor Gooch has made close to $8 million in 5 years on the PGA Tour. Yeah. That is, if you would have asked me that prior to the week, even if I said, hey, he wins this week, yeah, what do you think he's made? Like, I wouldn't have even guessed this guy was in the top 75 last year. He finished 68th last year in the FedEx Cup, 60 the year before, 101 the year before that. He's only ever had to go back to Korn Ferry Tour Finals one time in 2018 since he's been out there. The guy, he's a player. He is absolutely a player and just not getting enough credit. He's not a sexy name. He spells his name terribly, but I mean, he didn't choose that. That's not his fault. And, you know, his last name is what it is, but like everything I've heard is everybody loves the guy, you know, just from, you know, the Midwest. He's literally from the Midwest, from Midwest City, Oklahoma. That is as Midwest as you can get. 30 years old, first time winner, won on the Korn Ferry Tour a few years back. And, you know, watch out for his name. He's been that guy that just kind of hovers around, but he's not one of those big names. So I don't think I want to clarify. You're not giving a par to Taylor. You're just giving a par to the takes out there.
Yeah, it's exactly. And definitely not a par to Taylor. It's just more of the takes of people underappreciating the talent that is out there. And the fact that even though you haven't heard a lot about the player, they're capable of winning and there's ones to watch every week. And that's what makes it fun. That's what makes it fun to talk about golf as well.
It just shows everyone out there could be anyone any given day. Martin Trainer a week ago was in first on the back nine on Sunday, and the next week missed the cut after Taylor Gooch finished 60th the week before and then just won. Like anyone, I think people don't realize how tight the gap really is out on the PGA Tour.
I mean, look at Max Homa last week, your pick, you know?
Yeah, we should get to that. So I picked Max. Good transition. Max missed the cut. I didn't, like I said afterwards, I didn't like the pick. I did no research and should have did some research. It wasn't great. You pick Webb Simpson. Webb Steady Eddie, as per usual, picks up a smooth $217,800 finishing T8. That means you're back in the lead with $304,325. And I'm at $227,813. Couple journeymen so far. I would say a journeyman having a, like, if we had to describe where we're at in, like, on our PGA Tour season, we're journeymen that are having a good start to the season before Christmas and everything. Like, you'd be happy with that. It would have been more money than we would have made on the Korn Ferry Tour. How are you feeling about your season so far? Three tournaments in, 304,000.
You know, I think as long as I keep cashing checks, it's going to be fine. But, you know, it was weird this week. And again, I thought Max was just going to go to town. I was watching the first round. He was a few under. He was moving along. And I was watching Webb, and Webb was like plus two and, you know, 120th or whatever. And then they just sort of changed gears and went the other way. And it's such a crapshoot more than anything. And it makes it more difficult in the fact that, you know, we're doing a one and done. Just the fact that, you know, we're trying to make use of these players strategically as possible to get in there and do that. So, I mean, any week you can be zero, which is the fact of life on the PGA Tour. You can play well and not make the weekend.
Make $0. And that's what's like for me. I'm that guy we're talking about where it's the guy that, hey, do a top 10, miss the cut. Like, that's it. And you're the vet out there. You're just chipping along, making some money. Also, just quickly on Webb Simpson, that guy is a sneaky grinder, an absolute sneaky grinder. And just a nice backdoor T8 for, you know, kids going to have some nice presents under the tree.
All five of them.
Off of Scotty's list here. My par for the week goes to Brooks Koepka signing with Srixon. I was absolute, no one had this. I don't know if you have rumblings and
he's been playing
scenes.
The iron since last year.
I understand
year.
That. I understand
Everybody's been
that.
Talking about it. You
I
haven't
understand
honestly.
That. I understand that. Let me finish my statement.
All right, get to
Nobody
it.
Had this a year ago is what I was saying. Oh. When he's always, when was the last time he actually held a full bag of a brand? Titleist?
2017, I guess. Something
and
like
then
that.
He used Mizuno's forever. Yeah. He tried TaylorMade's. This guy was just agnostic in terms of which brands he used. And now he's gone fully Srixon. I don't care necessarily either way. If Brooks didn't think it was best for him, clearly he wouldn't have signed with Srixon because Brooks clearly didn't need the money in the first place. Easily the biggest face on that team in North America, recognizing right. Hideki Matsuyama is easily the biggest face on that team if you're talking about popularity side of things. And then our guy Martin Trainer coming in third. It caught me off guard. I love, though, that the 3-iron his Nike Vapor Pro is still a bag. Yeah. I want to know how many extras of those he has. Like, that kit,
a good
is
question,
that his last
actually.
One? The old TaylorMade M2 Tour High Launch 3-wood still kicking. Still going to be using the Scotty Cameron putter by the sounds of it. And I think one of the and it's probably not really a shock, but like, I was like, mid-sized grips. He's not that big of a dude. It's just like, just that preference of having that bigger grip, and that he always kind of plays that cut, you know, mid-sized grip's going to help you from, you know, not turning it over as much, you know, little quick tip there. There's a lot of details in the what we're getting here. There was a lot in there. I was impressed. Like, his driver, 44 and a half inches, like, it's pretty much shorter than tour average. You know, his irons are, I believe, cut a quarter. Like, they're very specific. I love seeing this. Usually don't get all that information.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to see if his deal is one that forces him to make a transition at some point. I'm thinking it's not. I'm thinking it's basically a, you know, a limited amount of clubs, and then he can make a choice one way or the other. But it'll be interesting just to monitor that to see if they'll try to work away at him and get him into some of their product. And I'm not sure they can or not, but we'll see.
How long? I'm going to set the over under at 4.5 tournaments that Brooks plays before there's a different driver in the bag.
4.5. So we're in there. So we're thinking Century Tournament of Champions. I know, that's what I'm trying to think of his starts. I think by, although it's, you know, it's a solid driver, I think by Phoenix, we're going to see another driver in there.
So you're kind of, I think that's the under for him.
Probably is close to it. Cause and it might be only for a week or two or whatever. I think he's probably going to have something happen in one tournament and he's just like not going to be sure about it. And then he'll wander back to, you know, an old favorite or whatever, you know, he might put the Zrixon back in his bag after that. But I got a feeling that, you know, when you're brand agnostic for that amount of time and you're keyed in so much on your own personal preferences and what exactly that you want, it's really, I mean, as easy as it should be for a manufacturer to get you exactly what you want, it's hard. You know, there's a lot of things that just, you know, a player, it can throw them off just by a little bit. Oh. So, yeah, I would say I'll go the under.
Yeah, and the confirmation and bias that players look for when they're hitting new clubs too. It could be the exact same and it's in their head it's not going to be, and that could have effect on the swing. And yeah,
no knock on Clevelanders Zrixon. And that's
I haven't, really I for the preference. Record, I haven't hit that Zrixon driver. I don't know the last time I've actually seen one. It's just one of those rare ones, and I'll give them credit. There's a lot of guys that were Zrixon guys that were not playing Zrixon drivers the last couple of years. If you look at what's in the bag, a lot of these guys the last year or so, you're seeing this driver in the bag. They must have, there must be some change into it. I haven't even had my hands on it. I have no idea what it is, but there's credit there. There's something to that. And I would love to give it a shot at some point the next time I can. I don't know when I'll be at a Zrixon fitting. That's something that usually comes down to our old neck of the woods. What's your bogey for the week? I think it's related to Brooksy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it is. Actually, the Brooks Bryson is this week. I couldn't have told you that was.
So it's this week. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. It's Thanksgiving down in the U.S. So, you know, it's I think, maybe.
What day is it on?
I don't know. I don't even know. Okay. Like, it's supposed to be this week for the
match. Is it over? It's only been 12 holes.
Maybe, so but it could be over now. But you know, I saw the one promo with Bryson hitting off the top of the hotel with the win or whatever. But I think for me, I was hoping by now, and the bogey is for me. I was hoping by now I would actually care about this event in some way. But somehow there's nothing in it that's making me go, I've got to watch this. It's must watch TV.
It's pretty bad. Neither of us know when it is. I'm just looking up right now before I actually figure it out.
I mean, I'm happy. I'm going to watch the highlights, but I can't see myself taking up time in my day to sit down and watch all this.
If it's not on Friday, then they're failing, and it's not, it's on Saturday. So now you're competing with college football
exactly
on Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I wonder what I'm going to be watching in the States. Right. It's just a terrible choice where Friday would have been a perfect day. You got the NFL all day on Thursday. You just smoothly transition into 12 holes of Brooks versus Bryson, just an absolute garbage match, but whatever. And away we go. I have an idea. You want to add, so our overall pool here, what if we throw it's 100K to the winner? Okay. That's it. And one of us gets Bryson, one of us gets Brooks.
Do you want to pick?
I think it is my pick. So I'll forfeit the week after. That means it goes back.
All right.
And I'm going.
Because we don't have a PGA Tour event. So we got to pick some.
Yeah. I'm going to hate this pick. I'm going to take Bryson. I'm taking Bryson.
All right.
I think he cares more about it than
Brooksy does.
Yeah.
Sure. So, why not?
Yeah. So I'm going to take Bryson. It's for 100K.
Go Brooks.
Yeah. You got Brooks. But I mean, maybe it gives us something to watch for, right?
I guess.
And for the record, this is 100K hypothetical money. Scott, of course, I don't have that money. The podcast, unfortunately, the sponsors, we haven't had them sending us our.
Look,
our
I'm still getting peanut brittle for my mom. I'm 51. Yeah. I haven't got the money to buy
I'm drinking
own.
A Coors Light right now. That's like, times are tough over in T-Talk land. So send us some beer, send us some ads, and we'll read them off. But I agree with you. Just don't really care about it. Won't watch it. Might catch the highlights. I think I'm going to be painting baseboards on the weekend.
Oh, Jesus, that might be more exciting than Brooks and Bryson.
It more. I'd throw a podcast, do that. It might be better. My honorable mention for the week. I got a bunch. I got to throw off a bunch of them, Scotty, just for your thoughts. Honorable mention. I'll give this one as a DQ to Rory Sabatini. Forgot to take the sticker off his driver.
I will give him credit. He called it out himself.
Well, yeah, I mean, those are where it's like, it doesn't matter. these are the rules of golf where it's like there's 0% chance this actually mattered to his swing, but whatever. So DQ'd Rory. I wanted to give a birdie to Taylor Gooch for that win. I just, as you kind of highlighted, under the radar. I'm giving a mission trip to Billy Horschel. He has to go on a mission trip back to zero status on the Korn Ferry Tour and try to get back to the PGA Tour and go out and donate your money, Billy, because it's so like we should, like, you forgot where you came from. So let's humble yourself and go on this mission trip back to zero status. Give up your status. Show how, you know, just because you want it so badly, you'll make it to the PGA Tour. Just an awful take. If you haven't saw it, go find it. Just such a glass house.
Oh yeah.
Take. So yeah.
Always remember where you come from.
Yeah. A mission trip. Didn't know what I was going to name of that one, but I like that one too. And then I'm going to give a hole in one to Judy Rankin, who will be retiring next year. You could have caught Julie basically every single week doing the LPGA tour and you know, Hall of Fame career inside and outside the booth. Love Judy. Hope she enjoys retirement. And here's the next lady up that gets that job. I wonder who we're going to see in there. Have any thoughts? Michelle Wee. I know she's playing again, but you know, who could you expect out there?
That's hard to say. I mean, we could probably see the transition. Maybe if you dig into the, you know, the Golf Channel personalities, as far as the staff that's there now, maybe we're going to see them where we're already have seen Paige McKenzie on more broadcasts. I don't know if she's really got the pedigree to do that. I think Dottie Pepper enjoys being on course. So I don't know if that's something she wants to do more and be in the studio, but I'm certainly sure it's big shoes to fill. Definitely. The great part about Judy is that even though, you know, she played in the era that she does or did, she's gotten to know the personalities of the players and got to know the players, which I think is great. Didn't always give things based on her perspective from the time that she played. She realized that times have changed and that they're different. And she only lent the information that she felt really was relevant to the viewer today. And I think that was the secret to her success more than anything. And damn, she's a nice lady too.
Yeah, and I think she was honest too, and
very much.
I know, like, many times she would talk about, like, her old saying, play the tees where, you know, your approach is in a par fours or seven iron or less. Like, such a small thing where it's like, hey, you don't need to play these crazy tees. Like, look at what these ladies and the guys are getting into, you know, par fours. Why are you playing from the tips and hitting four irons? Like, just little things. She was always great calling a tournament. One of my favorites. Enjoy retirement. If you had to choose now, Scott, so I want you to go hypothetical. You didn't play my game, so I'm going to make you choose somebody. If you had to choose a woman to come in there, who are you choosing?
Wow. I would have to probably have a look through, but I've actually surprisingly been impressed with Amanda Blumenhurst at Golf Channel. She's gotten better and better at the job and that she's doing. So I wouldn't be surprised to see her come in there and do that. I think Karen Stubbles deserves a shot to be the main person. She's obviously been doing more and more broadcasts kind of all over the place, but I think she deserves a shot to be the main analyst in the booth there for sure.
I was going to say Joanne Carner, but whatever.
There's, you know, you can't smoke in the booth, dude.
So. they probably let her do it. Maybe. What's your honorable mention for the week before we hit our interview this week?
All right. I'm going to give a birdie and it's going to be to you of all things.
Finally.
What did I do? I think you really hit the post. You were talking last week about Tiger Woods and the odds that he was given for the Masters and the fact that people needed to jump on that right away. And voila, everybody's all of a sudden going, man, Stefan, is he insider? What's he, you know, Tiger comes out with this video and then next thing you know, boom, he's the odds on him. Now, I mean, you could take
like 8-1, 4-1, something.
I don't know what they were. The last time I looked, they were just plummeting. And I mean, you could get Sungjae or Phil Mickelson for different money. So, wow. I mean, that's kind of insane. So I think he's down to 35 almost immediately. And I wasn't sure where they headed, but I mean, he's got to play too. So,
yeah. So the book that I was looking at with Bet365 last week, you're still getting it actually on there at 51-1. So it must have dropped for a bit. As I said, the value isn't going to be higher. And especially if this is a swing video, I said, if a swing video comes out, he's going to be playing.
Yeah.
Like he's not going to post a swing video if he does not think he's going to be playing. And if you noticed, the title of that swing video was the same title the last time we went through this whole routine and he came back. So 51-1, great odds. I know in the States they were dropping. In Canada, if you are betting on Bet365, you can still get those odds. If you believe Tiger's going to play, again, if he doesn't play, you get your money back. So it's great odds, but it went way down.
And there you go. You got a birdie to start the year next year.
Yeah, there you go. I'm one under. There you go. Who do we have this week for our interview, Scotty?
Yeah, Russell Budd is going to join us. Russ is a Canadian who went to college at DePaul and then is founded the Toronto Players Tour. And then also it works in operations and rules currently for the Mackenzie Tour, PGA Tour Canada. Plus, he was a player on the Mackenzie Tour and the PGA Tour Latino America. So he's got a lot of perspective, and we got a lot of questions for him about a lot of different things. And he certainly serves up some answers. We want to welcome to the podcast Russell Budd. If you don't know Russell, you're probably not around Canadian golf much, because this guy's a little bit of everywhere. Currently working in rules and tour operations for the PGA Tour Canada Mackenzie Tour. Also a founder of the Toronto Players Tour and a former player. I will have to find out how much he's playing these days. But Russell Budd, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Just to sort of catch up, you know, it's end of the season, but you're still busy. Just back from the Q School with the tour at PGA Tour Latino America, I believe. How are things for you these days?
They're good. Crazy, but good. Nice to be back home.
And how was that experience for you down there? Obviously, a lot of new players coming up. You're seeing them all the time. Any surprise players that you saw down there or any cool stories? Did see a Canadian get through down there.
Yeah, it lots of people that I used to play with who didn't realize I'm working now, because in the last 2 years they haven't seen me because of this thing that we call a global pandemic. But it was actually kind of fun to work alongside a lot of the guys that you know, worked Latino America when I played. So I kind of have a different perspective on even the challenges of working in Canada and North America compared to even Mexico, and Mexico is still considered North America. It's definitely a lot more challenging, and we take a lot for granted up here.
Well, it's crazy because it's 2 years removed from you playing on the tour. If we had told you 2 years ago that this is where you'd be running your own tour in Canada for players that really had nowhere to play at the start of the pandemic, you're now a rules official. Like, did you know that at the end of your 2019 season that you were done playing, or was this just a product of COVID losing another one?
So I actually, so maybe I knew something that people didn't know. No, I'm joking.
Predicted the pandemic.
Yeah. So at the end of our 2019 season, we were at our tour championship down in, at Doral, and I finished 32nd or 33rd on Latin money list. And, tournament director came up to me and asked if I knew someone in Canada that was, you know, interested in the job. And I said, yeah, I'd be interested. And it was just kind of a spur of the moment thing. And, I've said this to many people that, you know, over time your priorities change, whether it's in golf or not in golf. And for me, I think that not only my priorities, but, you know, I wanted a different challenge and to kind of fit where what the priorities of my life are. And it sounded perfect. And unfortunately, COVID kind of killed our first year, but opened up, I think, another door for me with the Toronto Players Tour and really getting to know the other side of the game. And really, you know, trying to build relationships with people, and players, and, I love the decision I made. I would have liked it there to not be a global pandemic, so things could be a little bit more normal. But looking forward to kind of 2022 and getting things back to, we can, I guess, normal.
that word that we use that we're not sure if we can use anymore. So, yeah. And, you know, how did that go? I mean, obviously, we saw the tour was fairly well received. A lot of players appreciated the opportunity to get out there. I managed to get out and see the event at Smuggler's Glen. And, you know, there's a lot of talent that was out there as well, which was kind of nice to see. What were your thoughts overall?
I thought it was a really great year for us. Our partnership with Golf Town has been huge, opened up a lot of doors with Sobeys, Pure Later, Three Sheets Brewing, Acorn Development, a bunch of our sponsors, Jeff Schuster Golf. And it really benefited the players. And I think, you know, we'll continue to do this year after year. We'll try new golf courses, try new formats, try new pay structures, whatever, because if you're stuck doing things one way for so long, complacency is not good as a player or for business, in my opinion. And we're looking forward to, you know, we've already been working really hard to secure some sponsors for next year and continue to grow the tour, but more than anything, just storytelling our players, because we do have a lot of talent, like you said. And kind of our biggest thing is we'll give them a venue, we'll listen to what they want. And then from there, we want to tell the story of not only our players and how amazing our athletes are, but the sponsors and the host facilities that have us there. Because, you know, it's not just a golf tournament. It's, you know, ideally in the long term, there's a connection and a relationship built between our players, our tour, and the area and the golf courses.
Yeah, and there's so many good players out on that tour, and obviously forced to play. They had nowhere else to go, and you kind of saved them in 2020. One of those names, you know, Brendan Leonard came up on this podcast earlier in the year, and I wouldn't have known that name going into the McKenzie Tour season if it wasn't for, you know, him winning every single week on the Toronto Players Tour, it felt like. He obviously goes on to start the season on the McKenzie Tour, picking up a win, and, you know, looks like he's destined for good things in Canada next year. And who knows where else? What other players should we be looking out for that kind of stood out to you this year on your on the Toronto Players Tour?
Oh man, way to throw me
on the under the bus. Yeah. Who has the best snacks though? I know you can answer that one.
Riley Goss definitely has the best snacks. Yeah. You know what? I think so much of the tour has. I think in Canadian golf in general, we have a lot of talent right now. I think a lot of it is. I feel like we, and this is not meant to be political, but I think we put our athletes kind of in a step behind last year with how COVID, and by no means am I saying that they had it worse. There's plenty of people that really got affected really poorly by the pandemic, but you know, not having competition for a full year of what you're not used to or expecting, it puts you in a really difficult situation because, you know, everyone else that's in the States where, you know, we all know that COVID is treated a little bit differently. They're able to do their normal thing and their golf courses were open in May and June when ours weren't. And I think and they were able to use gyms and facilities. So I think it put our players kind of in a step behind last year, which wasn't ideal, but I think we have a lot of talent up here. I think a lot of it has to do with guys just getting experience. And I think Toronto Players Tour this year, but also how PGA Tour Canada, McKenzie Tour was ran this year was, gave guys an opportunity to see what it's like at the next level and, you know, either learn from it, figure out what they need to do better to, you know, compete at that level. But I think there's a lot of talent. I think it's just more or less just trying to find who's got it and, you know, get the reps in.
Yeah, and
that I think was a way of dancing around your question.
Yeah, without naming names. But, yeah. You know, that said, yeah, when you got out to see some of the events this year, again, it was different as far as the tour. Obviously, you know, they split the tours and the fact that they had the Formula Tour in the States. So it was mostly Canadian players that were playing up here. It was more sign up rather than qualify. They weren't going to Q school to get access to play. They always had to meet a certain standard or whatever. But as you said, that gave them a lot of opportunities to really sign up and go play and see if they could, you know, if their game could hold up with tour players. And some found out it was not thought a different, it was much different than maybe they thought it was. And others maybe found that, you know, they were decent enough to play out there. And is that what you saw too? You saw, I mean, it was probably a wider level in talent for sure at every single event, but you know, it was probably, as you said, a good entry point for some players to realize that maybe, yeah, maybe I can pursue this.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the biggest thing is I kind of, and this is me being a player, is I see different players in different parts of their, call it a professional journey, different opportunities. So you see guys like Brendan and guys like, you know, your past guest, Mr. Bursey. I think that their games were at different levels than a kid that's, you know, fresh out of, like Noah Steele, for instance. He's out of fresh out of school. He's got tons of talent, but more or less the clock's not ticking, right? He's really just trying to soak it all up and really learn from the experience. And you guys got like Sebastian Zermak and Lenny and Michael Blair and Bursey. Those are guys that, you know, they've been around the block. They've played their fair share of mini tours in Canada. And I think that this was an opportunity for them to learn how to win at the next level and really set themselves up for a full season next year, you know, to earn their Korn Ferry Tour card. And I think they took advantage of it. And, you know, Blair was a great example. I don't think he finished outside the top five, the first four or five events, but he was kind of sniffing around the leaderboard and just really wasn't able to close it out. And Blair rented our basement actually at my house. And I kind of got to know him a lot better and realized how driven he is and how he's got the it factor in my opinion that he has a plan. He knows what his plan is and he's going to stick to it. And he's got goals, and it was very thought out. And to see his journey this summer and to win in the last event, I think we all were happy to see that because we know he's got a lot of talent. And for him, it's just, you know, can he do it? And, you know, hopefully you look back 2-3 years from now and say, hey, you know, this one event that, you know, got him into the winner's circle, that's what kind of got him going. And, you know, he's on the PGA Tour or on the Korn Ferry Tour. And that's kind of why we do what we do, is we want to help get those guys to the next level, especially when they're good guys.
I'm curious if you've seen anything on the other end where, you know, we hear Blair, he comes on here and this guy, you know, even off there, like, hey, like, what are you up to tonight? It's like, you know, like I'm going to eat my chicken and my rice. And like, you know, it's like everything's in line. What about the other end? And obviously you're never going to name names here. I mean, you can, if you want, not my decision, but you know, guys that you're seeing, not necessarily doing the right things, but almost a reflection of yourself. You're like, man, I was doing that back then. And I wish I knew what I knew now, 'cause I wouldn't do that type of make those type of decisions.
Yeah. I mean, you see a lot more of it in Latin America when I was playing, just because once you miss a cut there, you're not going home. There's no flights to go home. You're stuck there and you can get yourself into trouble pretty easily there. And it's just,
let's get into that in a bit. I need some Latin America stories soon, but yeah,
it's frustrating. I think, especially when you do mature, it's immaturity in my opinion. I think the when your priorities are right and you understand that this is a job and, you know, people are financially supporting you or you're financially supporting yourself, and you got to take it seriously. And by no means is that a reason not to enjoy yourself. You should be happy, but I think you need to prioritize yourself. And you see it all the time. You hear the stories about guys boozing and all that stuff. And it's guys do it. And there's tons of players that have tons of talent and never reach their potential because they just priorities. It wasn't a priority of theirs. And it's really unfortunate because they have a lot of talent. So it is refreshing to see. And I think that's it's more of an old mentality. I think these kids now that are getting coached, and especially some of these college programs that are really top notch, I think they're teaching them properly and they're coming out of school prepared to play professional golf because, you know, that's been what they've been trained to do in college. And I don't think that the resources 10, 15, 20 years ago in college golf was anywhere even close to that. And that's why you see the success of all these young kids, whether it's PGA Tour University with the Form Tour this year, or, you know, these kids that are going to Korn Ferry Q School, or even playing PGA Tour Canada, they come out and they're ready to go. Like they're not they're not there to finish 70th on the money list. They're there to win. And I think that's a big reflection on maturity and how the game has changed.
And you mentioned, you know, spending years. How many years total did you spend? You played 5 years or so down in PGA Tour Latino America?
Five feels like 12, but yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I guess for people that are not really familiar, I mean, they might think of it as some, you know, exotic vacation of some sort. You're off to, oh, Argentina and Chile or whatever. What are the realities of it? Because I don't think we really dove in deep with, you know, some of our guests in the past that have played down there. The goods, the bads, the uglies. Give us some stories.
There's some great places and there's some places that are difficult. And I think it's just, you kind of sign up for it. No, you don't sign up for it. You just, it's what makes you a more well-rounded person. And I think that's why I've been successful with everything I've done, is because I have a lot of perspective on life, because you've seen how lucky we have it, right? Even when you're having a crappy day, like, be thankful for food, roof, family, living in Canada. Like, there's a thousand things that we should be really thankful for. And you just realize that, you know, accommodation wise, you're not going to get the best sleeps of your night of your life on some of the beds down there. And, you know, restaurants open up late and you have a 6 a.m. tea time and it's difficult to get food and there's language barriers and your clubs don't get there. And I mean, I think it's a really good example, life example, when you play down there, because nothing goes as planned. Nothing.
Make it easier when, you know, guys play down there and then come back and then they go, oh, okay, this is simple.
The guys that I know that, you know, are playing on tour now, that I played with, Adam Shank and Keith Mitchell and all those guys, I think if you ask them, I think they have a different perspective on life, because they realized how hard it was to do everything down there. And now all of a sudden they, like, it's the easiest thing ever to travel and play. And I think it, you know, it's not tough love, but it teaches you how to roll with the punches, and not everything is perfect. So, you know, and this is what I saw as a player. And even now when I, you know, working for the tour and doing Toronto Players tours, that you see guys that, you know, they come out of college and they're like, this is the way they do it. And they're very like regimented at what they're going to do. And then they need to understand that you can't always control that. And especially right. When you're trying to play developmental tours where, you know, you're not flying private jets, your clubs are getting transferred, you know, three different planes, and, you know, you're sleeping in a crappy little Airbnb, and you need to be a little bit more flexible with your schedule, and you're not going to be banging balls on the range. Like, it's just a little different. And I think once you learn that and can understand that, you can learn a lot about yourself, and that kind of makes you, I think, a better, not only a professional golfer, but like a person. Like, you learn how to kind of roll with the punches. And that was to me the hardest thing to do with Latino America.
Which I need you to give me a story on the Tiger Woods of PGA Tour Latino America, Michael Buttacavoli, Buddha. This guy, like, he's been out there forever. He's 33. He's got 4 wins out there. He's had what status one time ever on the Corn Ferry Tour. Like, how is this guy still doing it at this age? Is he out there this year? Like, what?
He's at Q School actually right now in Argentina.
He doesn't have lifetime status. Like, this guy should, he's the Tiger Woods of the tour.
He's a great guy. Two stories about Buddha. Well, one most people know is that in Nicaragua, the 18th hole in Nicaragua is a par 3, and it's right by the ocean. And they had a big jumbotron leaderboard right next to the green. And everyone had, I don't remember where we were going the week after, but if you didn't get on that flight Monday morning, you weren't going to the next event. That was just the way it was. And him and Michael Davin, who's another good buddy of mine, they were in a playoff and they kept on playing that par 3. And they both agreed that they couldn't play, that they weren't going to finish on Monday morning. So they needed to finish. And it was I mean, it was pitch dark for a good hour and a half. And I think they played it 9 times. And all you could see, you couldn't see the flag stick at all. You just around the green, it was like 150 yards, but around the green, you could just see the reflection. And he won on the 9th hole, I think it was, which was pretty crazy. And we were all a little liquored up. It was, I think the event was sponsored by Stella Artois. So they were flowing pretty good. But and then the other personal memory, I remember we were playing, I think it was his last win that he had in Latin America, was BMW Jamaica Open, and we got paired the first 2 rounds, ended up getting shortened to 3 rounds. I think on one of the holes he hit 5 tee balls. Wow. Tee balls. They were all hit pretty much in the exact same spot, and he managed to find his first ball and somehow saved a par on the hole and won the golf tournament. And then, you know, you think back to it and say, wow, that was the difference between the guy winning an event and not making a cut.
What about the other side, the guy carrying the bags out there? There's got to be some unique caddy stories from 5 years out on that tour.
They're special. You get some great caddies and you get some bad ones, but the passion they have for the game of golf is amazing. And they're lifetime caddies. And the thing that I always took away from it is, they like idolized us. They idolized the players. They idolized the tour, and we're so lucky to have them to be a part of it. And you know, they come from nothing. They worked their butts off for, you know, more or less for us, something nothing. And I always paid my caddy well, tipped them well, because I knew an extra $10-$20 to me is worth nothing compared to what it is to them. But some of those guys, I mean, I had a caddy in Argentina, and he was, I guess the same week. This guy, I mean, he reeked like alcohol in the morning, just reeked like alcohol. And he had a feather in his hat. I couldn't pronounce his name properly. And this guy just, he could read the greens blindfolded. Right. And it was just unbelievable. And I had a 54 hole lead, and he was just the nicest guy. And I think I finished 3rd or 4th. And then that same day, Cordoba is an old golf course. And it's just like a big square, this property. And at the corner of the golf course, there's 2 par 5s, and it's a double green. So we're over on one of the holes on the double green, and all of a sudden we hear this guy say 4, right? And all of a sudden we just hear a loud coconut that sounded.
Oh. Right?
We look down, and there's like one of the caddies in our group just flat on the ground. It's like a hot, stinging, hooking 3-wood right to the head. Okay. And this guy's out, right? And we got 2 holes to play. I think it was the first round. He's got 2 holes to play. And this guy, he wasn't all there to begin with. And he was definitely not all there after.
He's gone after that point. Yeah.
And he gets up and he can't hear anything, because I guess his ears are ringing, and he speaks Spanish, and my Spanish wasn't good enough. And at the time you needed a caddy. So he sends him in, right. And we bring a caddy out for him, or the tour brings a caddy out for him to finish the last 2 holes. And then the kid that I'm playing with, he goes up to him and makes sure he's okay, pays him for the whole week, gives him some money to go see a doctor, right? And this guy shows up the next morning at 7 o'clock, right? His whole head is bandaged up and he's ready to go, right? And I'm dying. I'm like, there's no chance this guy can even walk. Like, and he's like, please, like, don't hurt yourself. Please just take a day off. And this guy was a trooper. He did not take no as an answer. And he was determined to carry that golf bag. And he carried it the next, I guess, 3 days. And I mean, after just taking an absolute laser beam to the skull.
That is wild. You know, for you, how hard was it for you to transition away from being a player? I mean, it's not an easy decision for everyone. Sometimes it might be easier than others. But what was it like for you?
I think it was a lot easier than it would have been if I wasn't in the same kind of path. And to me, I love what I'm doing, and I'm lucky, very lucky to work with a great team at McKenzie Tour. Scott, Amy, Derek, Harv, everyone, they're great. Which makes my life way easier, right? It makes the transition much more seamless because you're with people that are passionate about what they do, and they're there, you know, to help you. And I think that was what made it the easier transition than I thought. And I was lucky. One of the guys that I played golf with in Latin, Jose Garrido, who works for Latino America, he was in the similar situation I was. He played forever and then took a job working for the tour. So the first person I reached out to was him to ask him what his opinions are, what was his experience, you know, going from playing to working. And he's like, oh, you'll love it. It's a great, great group. And he's 100% right. It's great. And I think, like I said, your priorities change over time. And my priorities changed, and I'm very passionate about this side of golf. And I think that I love the challenges that are ahead. And I'm fully a believer that everything happens for a reason, and you kind of find your path. I don't think I would be in this path if I didn't play for so long. And really, I think what one of the advantages of one of my strengths is that I did play for so long. And I think that over time, that's going to kind of be a major asset to me moving forward. But I love it. It's great.
The other thing to know is, like, as you're out there, just treating people right goes a long way, right? If you were a dick all those years, not being asked to come hang out around, like, and be paid to be there, right? Like, I don't think people realize the, like, golf, and whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, very long memories in golf. And, you know, you've always treated us great. And it sounds like the tour saw that as well. And that's why you're in the position you're in.
Yeah. And you know what? That's the funny thing is, in hindsight, thank God I was a fast player, because if I wasn't, I would have just.
Oh, it'd be impossible. Like, how would you be able to be a rules official? Like, you guys got to speed up. You would never hear the end of it.
You couldn't. And I'm fortunate that, you know, Matt Delaney, John Slater, like, they always talk about if we had a full field of Russell Buds, and, you know, we wouldn't have a job. And it's the nicest compliment anyone can say to me. And I think you're right on. You treat people with respect, and, you know, they ideally treat you with respect, which we know isn't always the case. But I think that's the big thing about, you know, being a tournament official, is that, you know, is building relationships, it's communicating things properly to people. And if you do it with respect and honesty, and, you know, you tell them the way it is, then that's all you can ask for from me or from a player.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate you coming on. Certainly a very unique perspective. And I think one everybody will listen to and enjoy hearing, especially that caddy story. That was amazing. So really appreciate that. And good luck with 2022. And we hope to catch up a bunch more then.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you to Russell for the interview. I loved how and why the Toronto Players Tour started and how it's continued since, a tour for the players by the players. And Russ is just a great guy. And I chatted with him a lot this summer about the tour and, you know, guys like Brendan Leonard. I wouldn't have known that name without the Toronto Players Tour. So yeah, love Russ and his perspective, and a lot of players like Noah, who you mentioned at the top, could learn a lot from his travels throughout the Latino America tour.
Definitely. Like you said, lots of perspective, lots of experience, and, you know, has given himself back to the game and given, you know, basically decided he's going to do some things to help out the players, like, you know, he would have hoped when he was coming up as well.
100%. We mentioned a little bit about it. Colin Morikawa obviously won it all in the race to Dubai, wins the final tournament, was the leader going into it. Only played, I believe, two European tour events outside of WGCs and majors. Do we need to have an adjustment on the European tour? I think I bring this up every single year.
Yeah.
when do we adjust it? Because I understand the WGCs are supposed to unify. Like, it just, I hate it. Like, why can't we have a guy like, you know, Dick Bland out there who's grind out all year, and now he has to compete against a guy that doesn't even play on that tour for 95% of his tournaments?
Yeah, I don't mind. I don't mind having the WGC involvement, but I think there needs to be a minimum participation level for events outside of the WGCs. And granted, the PGA Tour is probably
and majors.
Yes, of course, and majors. So, you know, the PGA Tour is probably not all that excited about, you know, providing those releases, given, you know, their schedules and stuff like that. But, you know, if that's the case, then those players are not eligible for that. So, you know, if the tour wants to be European Tour wants to make sure that they're taking care of the players from Europe and the players that are going to develop over there, I think they need to give them a little bit more attention. And like you said, it just seems sort of hollow when all of a sudden events that are held elsewhere are all of a sudden counting for points on that tour. And the players that are, you know, working their ass off on that tour, you know, and are the, you know, we'll call them the staple of those tour, the foundation of those tours. They may not be the superstars, but they need to be rewarded as well. So if all of a sudden, you know, you've got other people coming over and dipping into your pool, not so great.
Would five be enough for you
per year? I think so. I think if they play five regular season events outside of the majors, outside of the WGCs, I think that would be fair considering, you know, what the expectations are. And we see some things coming up, you know, with the PGA Tour where they're going to have some bonus pools for players that play certain amounts, especially for the players that are, you know, worldwide players, as we'll call it. And I think it would be great. And I think what they should do, though, is they should also have it much like the PGA Tour where they, you know, have this rule where you're supposed to play a certain number of other events in a period of time. Same thing for over there. So it would be great if all of a sudden you get an event in Italy, for an example, that's not normally a, you know, a big event, and they get, you know, one of the superstars or two in there. And I think that will lend better things to that tour over there and help grow that tour if they spread it around. So if superstars are coming over there, not only are they playing, you know, the WGCs and playing the, you know, the Race to Dubai series, the Rolex series, that they are playing in some of those other events as well that maybe are not the the biggest marquee events. And, you know, if they want to get that big prize at the end, they're going to have to do that.
Yeah. And if you actually look, Rory's pretty much close to that five number each year. The last time he did was 2019, and this year being weird and 2020 being weird, but generally speaking, he's out there and he plays a bunch of them. So I think five would be good. Five plus the WGCs can count. I think that would actually be a better representation at the end of the year of what you expect. And if we want that European Tour to have that partnership with the PGA Tour, right, and then make it so some of your players go to both and you have that, hey, in the morning you get to watch it. If I want to watch golf all day on Sunday from 8 a.m. till 8 p.m., I have that availability and they're players I want to watch.
Yeah, it can't just be the European Tour events that can offer the big, you know, appearance fees. You know, if that's the case, then that's what the players are going to do. That's it. But, you know, if it's mandatory that they go to some of the others, it's not like these guys are hurting as far as the expense is to be able to go and play some other event that's on the tour. But yeah, if you want to make this a more worldwide situation for the PGA Tour and the European Tours and Alliance and hold off other tours and other types of things, this is the strategy that could help make it stronger and make it more worldwide so that, you know, we have more players from Europe coming over to the US and more of those US players going over to Europe as well.
It's just funny to me, like that WGC workday event or whatever. I don't even know where it was, somewhere in the Midwest last year. Ohio, is considered, yeah, like Muirfield is considered like a European Tour event. When it's like that is the least. Oh, is there anything less than that screams Europe less than Ohio? Maybe Idaho,
Dublin, Ohio, the home of Wendy's. Yeah, mean, like that screams
Idaho,
Europe,
like Montana, like, you know, I guess like Arkansas, like, Arkansas,
Kansas.
Is pretty, yeah, those, that area, yeah, that might, but like it's just nothing European at all about them. But I digress. But you did mention, you know, these players not being strapped for the cash, yada yada yada. Well, they're not going to be needed to be strapped even more because the FedEx Cup prize pool money is going on up. The PIP is going on up. There's now this Play 15 program that's involved. Scott, just break it all down for us and let's talk about it, because I didn't think the PIP was going to happen again, but we're back again.
Yeah, it looks like so a memo went out from Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour commissioner, out to the players today. It was a follow-up to recent player committee meetings, and it basically laid out the fact that you know, the tour is doing good things as far as it's healthy. I think the revenues were 1.522 billion, something like that, you know, after expenses and whatever. They have X amount of dollars, so as a result of it, you know, they're obviously putting that back and pushing that into the players. Now, this is obviously a letter to the PGA Tour players. No mention in there of, you know, that money trickling down to Korn Ferry, PGA Tour, Latino America, China, you know, what, McKenzie Tour, PGA Tour Canada, whatever the case may be.
Billy Horschel will be happy about this.
Yeah, which is a little disappointing for sure. I'd like to definitely see maybe what happens with that for those tours. But in this case, it's early days. This is not even out officially yet. Like I said, it just went out to the players. But it looks like the FedEx prize pool is going to go up to $75 million from $60 million. That interesting thing is that the FedEx Cup money, which just went up to $15 million, and obviously Patrick Cantlay won that, is now going to go to $18 million. PIP will go up from 40 to 50, and this Play 15 program is obviously very similar to what we were just talking about. They're really trying to make sure that a lot of the players will play as many events as possible. Now, granted, as far as I knew, they were supposed to play 15 in order to keep their maintain their membership, but
yeah, Jordan Spieth got docked a pretty good fine the 1 year for not doing that.
Yeah,
if I'm not mistaken.
So I'm kind of interested of why or how this program will work. And basically what happens is every player that plays a 15 will get $50,000 automatically, which I find kind of funny since these guys are getting money as it is.
But there's some guys that that's great for. There are some where it's like, hey, that's going to cover a lot of my expenses. Like, you know, the guys that have been struggling and missing a bunch of cuts, and this is like their last year. Now they got to go back to the Korn Ferry.
Yeah, but those guys are going to play 15 if they can get in.
That's what I mean. Like there's some guys that play 30 events last year because they need to play every. They can't even miss a start.
Yeah.
Right. You know, we've heard that on the podcast from players. Like, I'm scared to miss a start. I have to take a start. Taking a week off is impossible for me.
Well, so this is not like it's motivation for a guy that can only get into 14 events. He can only get into 14 events. So, I mean,
I think what it should be is let's put, if they want this, I think what this would be better is if that 50 grand actually went to a charity. And instead, now if a guy is only playing 14 events, you couldn't play one more event for $50,000 to go to that charity.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to tackle it. Seems like
a good idea. I don't know. But
it certainly seems they're not short on cash. And obviously, you know, Greg Norman's probably reading that memo and going, oh boy.
Greg is pissed. Greg's pissed. This isn't working out for Greg.
How is the Asian Tour going to compete with that for sure? I mean, it's not like you're going to attract away a lot of players. Again, it remains to be seen kind of more details of this. What are the fine details of this? I'd certainly like to see some more of the money trickling further down. Not that Billy would, of course. But yeah, the rich are going to get richer here. And not that they don't deserve it. You know, they're obviously the best athletes in the world at their sport. But it would certainly be nice to see a little bit more money in the coffers for the support system as it comes up.
Yeah, I just think it's funny. Greg he just wants to keep fighting the bullet. And every time he goes up to him, he just gets knocked out and the kids disperse. And then you hear about it a week later. It's like, oh, Greg's going to fight him again behind the pizza shop. He gets knocked out again, but he gets back up. He's coming back next week. They're going to fight behind the Wendy's. It's just like, Greg, you just keep losing. The PGA Tour is going to keep winning. It's, you know, each time they try to start these other things, they just don't work. So I don't know. I don't really care. I think the PIP's stupid. I still think it's stupid. I also think it's dumb. They don't even announce who actually wins it. Right. It will come out somehow. I mean, Eamon Lynch gets every scoop, so I'm sure he'll find out.
Well, Tiger's video came out on Sunday, the last thing of the year. So
I love that.
Did you count for that? Maybe it was out for a reason.
Did you see Jim Herman's tweet where he's like, no. So gutless of him to post this when I was on the course and I couldn't respond, right? Like if you think I should win still and Tiger should lose, retweet that. Just great. I think Jim deserves some money off the pick. If he didn't get anything, I'm going to be pissed. But why don't we hit the mailbag, Scotty? Because we're talking Tiger and you mentioned he might come up in the mailbag. So why don't you hit the mailbag for us?
Yeah, for sure. Not surprised by this. I mean, right away, first question in. Basically someone said, so Tiger back for the Masters or earlier? Thoughts?
Oh, I'm going earlier. I'm going one other tournament.
Okay.
I think Tiger needs to see if he can walk four rounds and do it, because he doesn't want it. The worst thing for Tiger would be embarrass himself at the Masters, to go out and it not look good. And he's embarrassed himself many times. Do you remember that? I think it was the Hero World Challenge when he first came back. I think it was like 2015.
Oh, when he shot a million, had the yips.
Oh, he was like shanking balls over the greens, like just the chipping yips and everything. He doesn't want that to happen at Augusta. And Augusta, you need to be dialed in for that type of stuff.
Yeah.
So I would say maybe Torrey Pines. We're going to see him next year at the Farmers. I don't know if, like, I'd have to open up the schedule to really look.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we'll see him. You know, some people were speculating maybe he'll play, you know, father and son or something like that. I think that's way too early. You know, granted, it's not like this was his very first swing that they recorded here. He's obviously been hitting some balls. You know, we knew he started doing some stuff with his short game a little while ago, but it's a matter of the speed as well. And chances are, you know, he's probably made some swings at some faster speeds. They just decided not to do it not get everybody too hyper.
Yeah.
Remains to be seen kind of what pace that he's at. And I think you hit it right on the head there. And the fact that, you know, walking 72 holes is a whole different animal for, you know, somebody that we saw a week ago with a, you know, a significant gait in his walk.
I'll go as far to say he will play in two tournaments for the Masters.
If he's going to play in the Masters, I could see it too.
If he's playing the Masters, playing the Players.
Yeah, I could see him definitely if he is going to play the Masters and he's committed to it, unless he has a setback of some kind. I'm certainly sure he's going to have a couple of those events on his schedule. And if he gets, you know, closer to them and realizes maybe he's not 100% or he's not ready for it, then, you know, kind of won't do it. We're getting ahead of ourselves, I think, a little bit. I mean, if he comes back anytime next year, I'd be impressed.
I know Billy Payne is no longer the chairman of Augusta National, but let's assume you're Billy Payne for a second and you're still the chairman of Augusta National, because I don't know who currently is. I forget the name. It was recent. Do you know it off the top of your head?
Not off the top of my head.
Oh, there you go. I don't even feel bad.
Oh, it's Fred Ridley, the former US amateur winner. Yeah.
Fred Ridley. Okay, you're Fred Ridley. I'll be Billy, your friend.
Oh, God.
Tiger comes to you and he says, I'll play in the Masters.
If.
But I need a golf cart. Let him play?
No.
Wow, Fred.
Augusta would not.
No. It's completely up to you, Fred. The members have signed off. It's all on your shoulders, Fred.
No.
Do you do it?
Fred will not. Fred is a USGA kind of guy. Uphold the standards of the game. You know, it's an exemption. There's a tradition there. He doesn't want to give an advantage to him over other players. I think there's so much about tradition that, no, I don't think it happens.
What if now this sparks a boycott the Masters movement and there's protests outside? No, still not doing it, Fred.
It's happened with lots of protests, so they just do their thing.
Yeah, it's true. Augusta doesn't really follow rules by any means.
They make up their own. Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, 100%. I'm giving Tiger two. And did you give an answer? Are we at one?
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm with you. I'm one or two. If he's going to play the Masters, he'd definitely play one or two. I don't expect him just to pop up and play the Masters. So,
Schedule wise, I'm seeing if he does two, I think he's going Riviera, Players, and then he'll be there. I actually, now that I see Riviera on there, I doubt he goes to Torrey, right? Like, I know that's also a place he plays well or did.
Yeah,
or,
but I would look at it less that way than look at some place where he's comfortable. I mean, if he was ready really early and he felt he really wanted to test himself, I would pick Hawaii. It's one of the flattest courses out there. And, you know, while it's not a course that he plays.
He would never.
No, but because it's really flat and easy to walk, it might be.
All right. You're Kevin Na, and Tiger says he'll come play the Sony Open with you. but he has to use a cart.
Oh God. Next question.
Okay. So you're still against the cart idea. Yeah. All right. What's our next question?
All right. Somebody said, should I buy an all white golf bag or am I asking for trouble?
I've never understood why people think like you can't have an all like a white golf bag. Like when people are like, oh, it'll get so dirty. My first question I ask people is, what are you doing with your golf bag? Like, is your car the only thing dirty that it's going to touch is either in your car or like a golf course that there's a bunch of puddle. Like, I don't know, it does
dirty towel or something like that. But even then, it's not a fashion show.
No. Yeah. So, I mean, it clearly is. If you're worried about it, right? Yeah. So I say you should buy an all-white golf bag. Why not?
I'm with you. I'd like, go ahead. If you want an all-white golf bag, buy an all-white golf bag. I mean, will it get dirty? Probably. Yeah, whatever. But again, it's there to hold your golf clubs. If you think everybody's going to be admiring you because of your all-white golf bag, well, then I think you need to focus on maybe something else. That's more of a vanity project if you're buying an all-white golf bag and want to keep it clean so everybody notices. I have no idea otherwise. Why would you bother? Again, it seems to me it's more about function than anything else. So, but you know, that's me more than anything.
Yeah, if it's on sale, why not? Why not?
And hey, you know, Black Friday sales are coming up.
They are.
All right. On to the next one. And we got a few this week. We've got 7 in the bag here that we're going to answer. How would Jin Young Ko do playing a PGA Tour event? Do you think she would make the cut? Of course, somebody's going to ask that.
Yeah, I think obviously distance is going to be tough. She's not a long hitter. She averages 258 yards off the tee, which really isn't much shorter than what Colt Knost used to average off the tee on the
PGA Tour. Or Abraham Answer, who does not hit it very far.
Yeah. So that's going to hurt her, but her ball striking is so good that she will be fine. I'm sure she would be able to make the cut. There's going to be places she'll get killed. Absolutely. Just like there's places every player on the PGA Tour gets killed. And there's places why Tiger Woods isn't going to show up to certain places anymore because there's no point. He's not going to compete there like other courses. So she would be obviously hard pressed giving up that much distance on there. But when you putt as well as she does and you strike the ball as well as she does, absolutely throw her out there, and I bet you she would at the end of the year she would keep her card. I would actually go that far.
I would say as far as playing an event, love to see it. Is it necessary? I don't think so. That's up to her whether she wants to do it or not.
It's a losing proposition.
It is
for many women.
And that is a problem. Although, you know, I think, you know, if they took it in perspective and said, I just want to see how I measure up and it's a personal mission and they don't really care about the noise that comes around it, then fine. But they're going to have to be very, you know, they're going to be having very resolute about that and not, you know, listen to that noise and hear the criticism. And, you know, we've seen this, whether it's Annika or Michelle Wee, you know, playing events. I mean, you know, people made a lot of noise about it and made a lot of, you know, statements that, you know, probably they didn't really care about. I'd like to see it. Would I like to see her at every single one? No, if it was selected things, just like you said, certain golf courses, a place like Harbortown, she'd do great. It's a golf course that would benefit her skill set for sure. So she's a skilled enough golfer, you know, and people can massacre us for this, whatever they want. I'd still love to see it. I'd love to see how she measures up. As you said, there's probably not a lot to gain, but her own personal satisfaction. If she had that interest, she may not. But I'd say if you took her out to a place like Harbortown or maybe Colonial or whatever, yeah, she could make the cut easily.
Yep.
All right, next one here. What golf hole at a non-major for men would you want to play over and over again?
I think the easiest ones are to say like 17 at Sawgrass. I think would be super fun, right? It's par 3.
Semi-major though, I think is. But yeah.
No, it's not a major.
No, it's true. Yes.
It said non-major. Is it a major now? Is it now we have the fifth major? Because that's the John Deere Classic. I would go... Like we brought up Riviera earlier, 10 at Riviera, I feel like could be fun. Like you could play that 100 different times and find 100 different ways you made the score that you're going to make. Just because, like, look at the best players in the world. Look at how Max Homa won. He had a chip, like, basically left-handed right? After looking like a perfect shot. I think it would be fun and frustrating all at the same time. And at the end of the day, if you're going to play it over and over and over again, it better be fun, right? And it better not just be an easy one where you're, you know, down the middle, hit it on. Like, you're going to see a bunch of different things. Like, similar to, like, that's why 17 at Sawgrass might be boring. It's probably going to be, what, three different clubs maybe? Like, maybe a windy day. You're not going to hit a bunch where you could probably end up hitting every single club in your golf bag at some point at Riviera.
Yeah. And I think that lends to thinking about a par three where we'd probably throw that out. You know, you could think of seven at Pebble, or like you said, 17 at Sawgrass. And it's like, I don't know if I just want to hit that wedge at seven at Pebble over and over and over again. Par fives, there could be some that are in there. I would say, and you mentioned it, you know, Tenor Riviera, the drivable par four could make it interesting, and you know, you could attack and have a strategy in a different way. That would be a classic one for sure. Maybe, I don't know, 17 at Phoenix, you know, at TPC, the drivable par
four. That is a sick hole.
That could be a really fun hole to play over and over again. And I mean, you know, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, if you're trying to lay up, sometimes that bunker comes into play short, and obviously the water on the left. And, you know, if you get a back pin there and you get over to the right, it becomes near impossible to stop that ball back there. I think there's just so many, it has to be a hole that there's so many combinations of ways to play it to make it entertaining. And if it is that, and I think a short par four really offers that, then yeah, you know what, you could play it 300 times and not be bored.
Yeah, number six at Pebble could be a fun one. The par five, you know, the water's all there. The blind second shot coming into that par five, a lot of history. Obviously, the way they've been playing it lately is a little bit different than how it's kind of designed, where they're just kind of blasting it into people's teeth on standing over there drinking their Arnold Palmers. But I totally forgot about Pebble just from a standpoint of looking around. But at the end of the day, you know, we all eventually, you know, what we find beautiful eventually just becomes our norm. And eventually playing Pebble Beach every single day, I'm sure there's members out at Pebble that complain about it, you know, like, the greens are like just like any other course. So, I'm going to go with 10 at Riviera, but if you give me any hole except for the first two, I think at Pebble Beach, and I'd probably be fine with that too.
All right. That's all good there. All right. My buddies say I'm crazy, but I think I'd make better golf swings in one style of golf shoe over another. Real or not?
Do I know the person that asked this question?
I don't think so. No.
So I have a buddy. Hear me out on this one. This is crazy. So he'll pick his golf ball based on the wind, and I'm not going to give the brand, but they have an X model and a non-X model, and and the X model is generally the less spinny model, right? Sure. You'd think less spin in the wind, I'll play that one, right? No, he does it the opposite way of that. Like, this is how heady this guy can get. That's why I'm asking, did he write this question? Because he would think something like this, that like his swing is actually better because he's wearing, say, like a flat bottom shoe or something like that versus a standard with a
heel
shoe
or whatever.
Yeah. And, but like, that's how, like, he's like this with everything. It's like, everything's so particular. I mean, whatever, it doesn't matter. Just always funny. So when I thought when I saw this question, that's who I thought wrote it. So my answer is, you're crazy. I mean, I don't know what you mean by different, what style, but like, it's pretty crazy.
I'm going to go the opposite, believe it
or not. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Let's hear why.
You know what? I've seen testing in laboratories at the places like FootJoy where shoes can make a difference depending on the player. If we look at how they use the ground and how they move in their golf swing, different styles can certainly place their foot differently on the ground. So something with a higher heel, for an example, can basically put more pressure forward in your feet, different than, say, you know, something with a more athletic type build that changes your setup as well. And yeah, that can actually have an impact on what happens in your golf swing. So now trying to match that up, some companies have tried to do that over the years and in just dealing with things like mobility and stability, but it's not as scientific as maybe they would hope, but yes, there is probably some sort of difference. But that said, that's getting down to really fine straws as far as players are concerned. Odds are There's probably something else that has to do with it. And the other thing too, when you get players that change styles of shoes, and they can tell you even on the PGA Tour or LPGA Tour, you get players out of one style of shoes into a different other style of shoes, like anything else, it feels different. So, you know, they tend to overreact sometimes to that of what a different feel is. But, you know, after a while, it just becomes sort of normal. So I won't call them 100% crazy, but I will just say it's a pretty fine detail in regards to your entire golf swing.
Now, that's how confirmation bias works. Whoever asks this question is going to show their friends your answer.
Of course, yes.
They cut mine out. They're actually just, from here on out, they're skipping me. So Nick Faldo, yes, your squares shoes work. Thanks for asking the question. Come on the podcast anytime.
Oh, I love it. All right. If a channel offered more complete LPGA Tour coverage on a subscription basis, would you be more inclined to subscribe if a portion of the money went to increase their prize money?
Easily. That's like the easiest question. Absolutely. I mean, obviously you have to look at where your money is and if you have the ability to spend something like that. And if you're looking at it from like a donation standpoint, whatever, I don't actually think I would just want to watch the LPGA in full way. I could watch the PGA Tour. Yep. I think it's, as I kind of highlighted, way more relatable to watch. I think they play a much different style of game. Absolutely. I'll ask you, I know your answer is the same. So how much per month would you be willing to spend for that to happen? Say like you get, I'm not saying it's like, hey, you get to see every shot, but imagine what we get. So here's the thing, the kicker. It's the exact same type of coverage you get from the PGA Tour. So remember all those commercials, everything you get that way is the same, but it's the amount of time you could actually watch it, similar to the PGA Tour, is what the LPGA would be offering. So prime time, everything right when the tournament's happening versus watching it once it's already wrapped up or getting the last six holes of a tournament.
Yeah, it's probably going to be, you know, for me, it's probably going to be different as far as the value, just because, you know, in the industry and watching it or whatever, but, you know, I've got to put it in line with other cable channels of what you would pay of probably $5 to $10 a month. And you know, that would be more than worth it as far as to watch and see that coverage. If, you know, the quality was good, we also had, you know, other in-depth features, other coverage, you know, a dedicated LPGA Tour channel is what it would be. And also knowing, as you said, I'd do it anyways just to watch it. But if I knew that that money was going to support the players, and, you know, if you get several, whatever, hundreds of thousands of people that are interested in doing that, yeah, it could make a significant impact as far as the purses that are on that tour.
Yeah, I think 10, 15 is probably fair around that. I think it depends on what you're getting. Right. If it is, you know, full LPGA, full women's golf coverage, similar to the Golf Channel, but purely for the women's game, then yeah, I think I'm more on that higher end than on the lower end.
Yeah, for sure. All right. On to our last one here. Back to our Brooks and Bryson match. If you could add a third player to the Brooks and Bryson match, who would it be? You could go lots of different ways.
I'm going to let you go first. I usually answer all mailbag questions first, so I want your thoughts.
Well, based on the players as they are, probably the sentiment that a lot of people have towards these players, some positive, some negative, I'm going to say just throw Patrick Reed in there and have the trio in there.
That was one of my first thought.
Make it as ugly as possible.
I'm so glad I sent it to you because I didn't want to say it. So I was hoping you were going to go that way. You know what? Here's what I'm going to say. I'm saying, you ever seen that GIF of the Undertaker where he sits up?
Oh yeah. Where he comes up
in the coffin.
Up. Yeah. Of course.
I'm going Tiger Woods. I think Tiger gets the tee. They're standing there. What's that random box?
Well, at least they'd actually have somebody watch. I'd watch that then, right?
Oh, can you imagine Tiger's playing them all of a sudden?
Yeah.
And then all the
like, it's off the charts.
You know, you hear, did you ever watch wrestling as a, like,
oh, when
you
were younger? Yeah, for sure.
You know, when the Undertaker come, all of a sudden you hear that, like, the gong, right? Like,
dong. Right. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like, I know it's daytime, but also the sun goes dark and then Tiger just sits up and then they're playing. And I would even take Brooks and Bryson. They play best ball against Tiger even. And that, yeah. So, no, I mean, if you're asking me if I could add somebody, it's that.
No, if Tiger was playing, do you even need Brooks and Bryson?
No.
Would you just watch 18 holes of Tiger?
I'd watch 18 holes of Tiger play Charlie right now at you know, where
at the medalist,
whatever yeah. medalist, you know, go even further, go back to one of those old dumpy courses that no longer is around that they used to all live on, you know, back in the day.
Sure.
Where yeah, any course he can gotcha. Fly and I'll watch that. So that's a good question. I like that hypotheticals this week.
I like it too. Thanks everyone for sending those in. Keep sending in those mailbag questions. We always like to hear them. And yeah, as Stefan said, the hypothetical ones we love. So keep them rolling in.
Well, that's it for the episode, though. I'm on Bryson this week for 100K in our year-long pool. You got mock money. And our mock money. Any final thoughts, Scotty? Anything else that we didn't get to? Anyone you want to thank? Thanksgiving. You know what? Yeah. Let's wrap it up this way. Let's go with what we're thankful for in golf right now. So just one thing for the year or just recently, just what are we thankful for this year for American Thanksgiving, which is the best holiday for the record. I'm not American, but like they do it right. A 4-day long weekend this Wednesday. If you're ever, I know you've been down in the States on a Wednesday before Thanksgiving. That's the place to be. A bar on a Wednesday before Thanksgiving is apparently just
see one of my American cousins tomorrow. Actually,
there you go. There you go. So, all right. What are you thankful for though? Before we wrap
I up? Am thankful for the people in the game that are realizing that the game is less it's less about the superstars and it's more about the people on the ground, and they're continuing to beat this drum on social media, other aspects of it, public golf, they're really supporting it. They're realizing that juniors and everything at the club level is just as important, if not more, than the stuff that gets the attention all the time, which would be the professional tours at the top level. You have to start one place to get to the other. And the people that are basically taking the time and the energy to, you know, look at stuff and take care of stuff that maybe they're not going to get something out of, but it is good for the game. Kudos to all them, and I'm thankful for them.
I'm thankful for golf becoming less and less stuffy. I just watched a video of Tony Finau shooting 59 with his shirt untucked. I mean, I don't even think it was a golf shirt. High socks at a very private golf course in Arizona. That's better for the game. Let's get more people playing by showing you don't need the latest fashion. You can grab whatever you got, go out and play. It doesn't matter as long as you keep up with the group in front of you and you're not a nuisance to everybody else out there. It doesn't matter what you wear. It's stuff like that. That's what I'm thankful for this year. It's getting better and better each year. I watched the LPGA on Sunday and all I thought was there, what was her name? NASA. I was
Hatioka.
Yeah. Hatioka. She looked like she's wearing a t-shirt and shorts. And why, awesome. Like, why can't we have the guys doing the same thing? It makes no sense. Let's get there. That's what I'm thankful for this year. And I'm also thankful for Russell Budd for coming on the podcast. Thankful for everyone for listening every single week. Thank you for, we're up to just under 100,000 total downloads, which I mean, I never thought we'd get there. I didn't think we'd get this many episodes. I thought you got sick of me a long time ago and vice versa.
Maybe I did. Maybe you did.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, sometimes, but we're good. So, and I'm thankful for you for walking over my golf swing each week. And we're making some big
progress,
yeah. Slow, but big at the same time. But yeah, overall, thankful for the podcast. Thankful for everyone for listening this week. And I'm thankful that you will turn in next week. So we will chat with you then.